As usual, we are all gathered here today to listen to another exposition of the Lord Buddha's teaching. Before we commence today's sermon, let us all take a moment to remind ourselves of how extremely fortunate we are to be students of the great master, to be his disciples, to have received his teaching, to free ourselves, to enable us to free ourselves from an endless spiral of suffering that we could see no end to. Before, we came across the Dhamma, and today a path has become available, and we see light at the end of the tunnel. With joy in our hearts, with honor, pride, and dignity, let us take a moment to take an oath, a solemn oath. This is an undertaking, a promise that we make to ourselves to remain his lifelong students, by continuing our journey on the path to liberation and freeing ourselves once and for all. As we take a moment to take this oath and to pledge our allegiance as disciples of the great master, thoughts that should run through your mind are how fortunate you are, how lucky you are, and how grateful you ought to feel for what the Lord Buddha has given us. So let us take a moment to recite those stanzas that were once uttered by Upali the householder when asked the question, "Whose disciple are you?" Let us all be upstanding and recite the verses before we continue with the remainder of the sermon. Dhirasya vigata mohasya abhinna khilasya vijita vijayasya anighasya susamachittasya Buddha-silas, sadhu-panyas, vesantaras, vimalas, bhagavatotas, savakohamasmi, akatankatis, tusitas, vantalokamisas, muditas, Kata samanasya manujasya antima sarirasya narasya anopamasya virajasya bhagavatotasya savakohamasmi asansayasya kulasya venaikasya Sarati varasya anuttarasya ruchira dhammasya nikhankhasya pabhasakarasya manachidasya virasya bhagavatotasya savakohamasmi nisabhasya appamiyasya gambhirasya monapatasya khemankarasya vedasya dhammattasya sanguttatasya sangatigasya muttasya bhagavato tassa savako hamasmi nagassa pantasenassa kina sanyojanassa muttassa patimantakassa dhonassa pannadhajassa vitaragassa dantas nippapanchas bhagavato tas savako hamasmi isi sattamas akuhas tevijjas brahmapattas nahatakas padakas asadhas vidita vedas purindadas sakkas bhagavato tas savako hamasmi isi sattamas akuhas tevijjas brahmapattas nahatakas padakas පස්සද්ධස්ස විදිත වේදස්ස පුරින්දදස්ස සක්කස්ස භගවතෝ තස්ස ශාවකෝ හමස්මි නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්ධස්ස Okay, let us take a moment now to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem and to observe the precepts. In order to do so, please repeat all together and after me. Buddhang saranam gacchami Dhammang saranam gacchami Sanghang saranam gacchami Dutiyampi buddhang saranam gacchami Dutiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami Dutiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Saraṇāgamanaṃ sampunnaṃ Pānātipātā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Adinnādāna vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Kāmesu micchācārā vēramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Musavada veramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi Surāmeraya majjapamādatthāna veramani sikkhapadaṃ samādhiyāmi Tisaranena saddhiṃ pañca-sīlaṃ dhammaṃ sādukhaṃ surakkhitaṃ katvā Appamādena sampādeta Okay, you may all now be seated. And before we begin, let us all take a moment to invite all the devas, brahmas, spirits, demons, particularly those who have been mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, relations of ours, and also those who would have been our friends, those who would have come to our rescue, provided us with support, shelter, and guidance when we most needed it. They, just as we once were, are yet destitute and lost in this riddle of samsara. They seek an opportunity to free themselves, to redeem themselves. Reminding ourselves that each and every one of them will have at some point in this long journey in samsara helped us, supported us, assisted us, and being grateful for what they have done for us, let us take a moment to repay those debts by inviting them to join us and to witness this meritorious deed. As it may be that they are lacking in merits, and that these merits may help them to free themselves from the woeful plane and be born in the blissful plane. So let us invite them to do so. Among them may be those who are already in the blissful plane. May they be able to listen to the teaching of the Buddha, understand and comprehend it, and free themselves once and for all from the clutches of samsara. So, with infinite compassion emanating from the bottom of your hearts, with a sense of duty and obligation as well, let us invite them to join us to witness this meritorious deed, rejoice in the merits, listen to the sermon, understand it, comprehend it, and free themselves once and for all from samsara and achieve the ultimate bliss of Nibbana. Samanta chakvalesu atra gacchantu devata saddhammam munirajas sunanto sagga mokkhadam dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Dhamma savana kalo ayam bhadanta. Before we begin, let us also take a moment to remind ourselves that although we may be kind and gentle beings that we are today, in this long journey in samsara, we have not always been like this. Quite the opposite has been true. Virtually always our associations have been with ignoble, immoral people. Such associations defiled our minds with desire, aversion and delusion. And having been blinded in ignorance and attachment, countless occasions we would have offended, reviled, desecrated, insulted the noble ones. Unfortunately, today we have to endure the consequences of such actions. However, we understand today that they're all mega obstacles on our path to our salvation. Therefore, accepting that we will have erred, acknowledging that we will have made mistakes. Today, as humble students of the noble ones, let us take a moment to seek their forgiveness. From the Sammāsambuddhas and the Paccekā Buddhas, Arahatta Buddhas, Anagamis and Sakṛdāgamis, Sotāpannas, be they on the path or having attained the fruits, as well as the Buddha's ministry. For any thoughts, words or actions of revile, desecration, insult, slander, or offense that we might have directed towards them. And what is equally important is that as you do so, let us take a moment to make a firm resolve to never conduct ourselves in that manner ever again. And finally, let us all make a firm resolve in the major course of this sermon. We'll be able to realize the Four Noble Truths. May all merits that I have committed throughout samsara come to my rescue, come to enable me to achieve that ultimate goal. And for those among you who may have already achieved that noble state, may through the course of this sermon you be able to fulfill the subsequent stages and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. With that firm resolve in mind, I invite you all to prepare yourselves now to listen to this sermon. Okay. Last week, we talked about something very close to our lives, something that impacts all of us, sometimes unbeknown to us, but like a silent killer, something that takes away what is most precious from us. Both you and I know that it is time we talk about here. I asked you the question, what is your opinion of time? Whether you believe that it is a friend or a foe, and whether your gut instinct about time is that it is a healer or if it is a killer. And as the sermon unfolded, I think most of you, I would like to think, would agree with me that as the sermon unfolded, you came to the inevitable conclusion that it can be both. Sometimes you see it as a friend, but in the very next moment, it can be considered your greatest foe. Sometimes it can be seen as a healer, but in the next moment, it could be seen as a killer. So we came across this conundrum. How do we treat time? Because it is once you have decided whether someone's a friend or foe, you decide how to treat them, right? If you think of someone as a friend, then possibly you might allow them in, sit them down, and you might like to spend some time with them. But what if someone's a foe? Then you want to keep your distance from them. You don't treat your foe just the same way you treat your friend. You don't treat someone who has come to heal you the same way you treat someone who has come to kill you. Unfortunately, with time, it seems we are stuck right in the middle, right slap bang in the middle. You don't know what to do with it. You don't know whether it's good or bad, whether it's a friend or foe, whether it's a healer or a killer. You don't know whether you need it or you don't need it, whether you ought to have more of it or you should possibly be aiming for less of it. It's difficult to say. You see, most people, well, virtually everyone, who does not analyze this situation from a different perspective, is going to end up having a love-hate relationship with time, as most people do in this world. The same man, same woman, can love time on some occasions and hate time on others. Sometimes in the matter of a few seconds, a few minutes, the same day, most definitely. But others who have gone on to become timeless, they have severed their dependency on time. they have considered the very question that I asked you. They have weighed up their options and they have come to realize that you can't do with it and you can't do without it. And that is time. So, why is it then that on some occasions it makes me happy, whereas on other occasions it makes me unhappy? Now, what we know through our understanding of the scientific method is that when we decide what effect a given factor has on a given situation, one of the best ways to gauge this is to take that factor away and see what impact it has. Right? So, in a given situation, if you were to take time away, would that make you happier or would that make you unhappier? What do you think? Let's go back to some of those examples we discussed. Remember the very first one, where you're stuck in your car, you just had an accident. You can hear the sirens blaring in the background. You're hoping that the emergency services would get to you as soon as possible. At the same time, you're starting to smell smoke. Right? So, in that situation, we want to gauge whether time is something that makes us happy or time is something that makes us unhappy. The scientific method tells us, take the factor away and see what impact it has. So let us take time away and see whether that makes us happy or whether that makes us unhappy. Reduce time. So what happens when you reduce time? When you reduce time, then the fire has come closer, also the fire ambulance, but now it's difficult to say whether you ought to be happy or unhappy. Let's put the factor back in. Say, pump it up a bit, give a bit more of it. Now what happens? Again, it's difficult to say whether you ought to be happy or whether you ought to be unhappy. Because although it's going to take longer for the fire to catch up and explode the car and to, along with that, destroy everyone in the car, it's also put that amount of distance between you and the emergency services who are on their way to rescue you. So now again it's difficult to say. Let's take another example. Remember Mrs. Richards, who was just informed of her father's imminent death if the doctors are unable to cure his cancer? What did the doctor say? The doctor said, it's going to take us about 4 to 5 years to work through this and completely cure him. We're going to try. But given his age, with every passing day, it gets all the more difficult. Because age is not going to be a supportive factor. So now, with every passing year, yes, you get closer to having him healed, but with every passing year, it also becomes more difficult to heal him, to cure him. So now again the question, time. If you give more of it, does that make you feel happier or more unhappy? If you take it away, does that make you feel happier or unhappier? What do you think? It seems, from my perspective, and I think you'll agree with me, that time does not seem to play a great deal when it comes to determining whether one is happy or unhappy in a situation. It doesn't seem to be consistent in what it does. More of it means happier sometimes, but more of it can also mean unhappier in other times. Less of it can be happier on some times, and less of it can be unhappier in some times. What does that tell us? Time does not determine whether one is happy or unhappy. But you and I may know this. Most people don't. Most people think that it is time that brings them grievance. It is time that takes away their happiness. And sometimes they also think that it is time that brings them happiness. And therefore, they are battling time. They have a struggle with time. There's never enough time to do everything. And on some days, there's far too much time. Getting through the day can be a drag. Don't you have days like that? Getting through the day, just getting through 24 hours is a drag. And sometimes 24 hours just doesn't cut it. Simply not enough. Essentially what you're saying is, sometimes more of it makes me happier, sometimes less of it makes me happier. Now this fails the scientific method. So we're going to have to try and find another way to establish what is this connection between time and our happiness. I'm going slow because this can get a bit heavy today, so brace yourselves. I want to try and explain to you why your minds work the way it does. And why sometimes the mind enjoys indulging in sensuality. What is the connection with time? You'll understand shortly. We live in an ever-evolving world, don't we? Needs and wants are becoming more diverse. People are no longer satisfied with what they've got, because they're constantly being bombarded with all sorts of indoctrinations. Possibly in the course of a day, if you live a regular life where you spend some time with people around you, maybe watch a bit of telly, read a newspaper or a magazine, listen to the radio a little bit, walk down the high street, looking at the shops around you, and maybe take your commute to work, and you do that on a bus or maybe a tram or maybe the tube, and then you see the adverts on the walls. So on a given day, you're bombarded with indoctrinations countless times. It seems to be that it is never enough this much is enough. Doesn't seem to be something that people can say today. How much money is enough? What do you think? If I were to ask you, how much money is enough? Right. Let's say you say, well, you know, on 50 million, I'd be fine. I'd be fine on 50 million. I'd be fine sailing. Let's go to someone who's got 50 million in their bank account. You want to find out what he does? Ask him what his ambition is. Ask him how much money is enough. What do you reckon he's going to say? Not everyone, but most people would probably say 100 million, and you know what? That'll be me. I'll pack my bags up. I just need 100 million. Yeah? Now let's go to someone who's got 100 mil. Now ask the guy, what's your ambition? When is it enough? Not everyone, but most would say, I'm just aiming for my 500 million, and when I've got my 500 million, that's it. I'm going to pack up. I'm going to retire. That's going to be me. Right? I'll have earned enough, and you know, I know I'll be able to live comfortably, and that should be it, me done. Okay, so let's go to someone who's got 500 million in their bank account. Let's ask him, what is your ambition? Is it enough? See, you can do this all day long, and you can get to the richest man alive and ask the guy, Mister, what's your ambition? How much is enough? What do you think he's going to say? We need to understand why it is that never is enough. Why is it never enough? And to understand why. The reason for this is the indoctrination. Everyone everywhere is trying to make a living. Yeah, this is a perfect system whereby you vex someone and then they come and relieve you. And then they, to relieve you, they have to vex someone. And then for them to be relieved, they have to vex someone. And now this is a vexation cycle. This is a vexation relief cycle. Let's say, for instance, you're a manufacturer. You manufacture something. Say you make cosmetic products. Right? For argument's sake. Now, you want to sell these products, don't you? Why would you want to sell them? Because you need some money. Why? Well, you've got bills to pay, you've got mouths to feed, and there are things you want. Right? So, you want some money. Now, therefore, you're going to have to advertise these products, and you want to get more people interested in your products, and you want them buying them. So, you're going to have to do what? Among your competitors, you're going to have to shine. And so you're going to have to indoctrinate your customers through advertising, word of mouth, and so on and so forth. So on the tellies, up on the walls, right, in the billboards, on the radio, in the magazines, on the tube, in the bus, you're going to have to market. You're going to have to advertise. So, you're going to have to indoctrinate people. They'll listen to what you have to say, and if you're lucky, they'll be indoctrinated. In other words, they'll accept what you say and they'll take it that whatever it is you're trying to sell them is pleasurable, joyful and essenceful. If you vex them just enough, this is the only way you can get them to part with their money. Either you've got to snatch it, which would be called robbery or theft, or you're going to have to vex them and then they'll part with it voluntarily. There are only two ways to get someone's money, right? I don't mean when someone donates it out of the goodwill of their own heart, and they do it because they want some merits. Well, then again, you could argue this is not because they want merits, right? But I'm saying let's take an average normal example that we come across every day. There's only two ways you can get someone to part with their money, either willingly or unwillingly. Unwillingly, you just have to snatch it. Willingly, you have to vex them enough. You have to convince them enough. In other words, you have to vex them. And I don't mean for a good cause, right? Don't misunderstand me. I'm saying this is how, I'm talking about 90%. Okay, there's the 10% out there who'll do it. You know, they're the philanthropists. They'll do it out of the goodness of their hearts. So, you have to vex them enough. And when vexed, they'll look for freedom. They'll look for an opportunity to relieve themselves of that vexation. So with your cosmetic products, if you indoctrinate your customers enough, your potential customers enough, now to buy your product, they'll have to earn money. So I'm showing you the vexation cycle here. They'll need money, just like you do, you need money today. So they'll need money. Now when they need money, what must they do? They know they need to do exactly what you're doing. Exactly what you're doing when you need money, which is what? Well, what it is you're doing now, which is indoctrinating someone. Just enough to vex them. And once they're vexed, then they'll go on to find a way to relieve themselves of their vexation. So for them to earn money, they're going to have to vex. So I'm talking about your potential customers, right? For them to earn the money they need to come and buy your product so that they are relieved of their vexation, they have to go on and vex someone else. So let's say, for instance, you sell cosmetic products and your customer is a hairdresser. And so there's a hairdresser who wants to make a successful business, and you have just indoctrinated them that to become a successful hairdresser, you have to use these products with your customers. And they've bought what you've sold. In other words, they've bought your case. They've bought your indoctrination. They've signed up to it. And now they need to find a way to get the resources they need to get what they need from you. So what must they do? Now they must go on and vex their customers so that they'd come and spend their money at their shop. So now they've got the money to buy your product, so that you've got the money to buy what it is that you need. Now whether you look this way or that way, this end or that end, really there is no end. This is a web of vexation. A typical case of you scratch my back and I scratch yours. Repeated time and time and time again. So, because there's no end to this, And because indoctrinations keep on happening every day, new indoctrinations creep into people's minds and people want new things every day. Right? So, the total set of indoctrinations that you hold today will change by tomorrow. Because today you're going to watch TV. Today you're going to listen to the radio. Today you're going to go on the tube. Today you're going to read that magazine. Today you're going to listen to someone speak. And they'll say, guess what? There's this new place. There's this new shop. There's this new restaurant. There's this new cosmetic product. There's this new car. There's this new television. There's this new game. And they'll start vexing you. They'll start indoctrinating you. And if you just accept that indoctrination, then you will then, as a result of that, become vexed. And that happens every day. So every day, new vexations keep on coming. Because new indoctrinations keep on coming. You know this as a fact because the things you see on TV are not the same things your grandmother saw on TV 60, 50 years ago. Because really, you know what? If we are a race that can be satisfied, if the human race can be satisfied, don't you think we have invented enough food items already? Don't you think we have invented enough perfumes? Don't you think we have sung enough songs already and produced enough albums already? Why are we so keen on inventing new culinary tastes? Something exciting, something new, something fresh, something new that excites the taste buds. Now look into the future. Do you think, right, for all the time that man has evolved, right from the Dark Ages, right from the Stone Ages, right from the Ice Ages to today, do you think, having come all this way, and even today they're inventing and they're discovering and they're trying to come up with new things, do you think there's ever going to be an end to this? In other words, do you think man can ever be fulfilled? Ever be satisfied? Reason for that. What is the reason for that? If your answer is no, what is the reason for that? It is because indoctrinations keep on happening every day. And people know this. This is what they teach you at marketing school. You have to get someone to want your product. Or you have to get something to want your service. And once you get them wanting it enough, as they say, you know, people think with their brains and they make decisions with their hearts. So in order to get them to part with their money, you need to build up an emotional case. What that really means is, you need to vex them. Because if someone actually thinks with their brain, right, with intelligence, then they'll think to themselves, hang on a second, I don't need this. I'm quite comfortable the way it is. This new perfume, I don't need it. That new restaurant, why must I go and try that? What's wrong with the restaurant I already patronize? What's wrong with what mother cooks at home? That would be an intelligent, that would be thinking that is brain-centered. But people make decisions heart-centered. They make emotional decisions. In other words, when they are vexed, they have to be relieved of their vexation. And that is the decision that they make. because it is the heart that gets vexed. In other words, it is the mind. So with all these indoctrinations, countless on a daily basis, new indoctrinations every day, new vexations every day. With new vexations every day, new opportunities people seek to relieve themselves of that vexation every day. So here's what happened then. What's the connection with time? That's where we started. When there's something you want, what is the biggest... Let me rephrase. When there's something you want, what is the distance between you and it? If you want a baby, what is the distance between you and the baby? Medical science says it's 9.5 months. The Apple company releases an iPhone every year. And you know this. So if you're an Apple fan, what is the distance between you and relief from your vexation? At most, it is 12 months. That is again only if you have the money. If not, then it's today. One day. Then there's a countdown, isn't there? 1 hour. 1 minute. And people even queue up outside the stores. I've seen some people, they'll actually go and sleep outside. They'll camp outside the store. Because they want to be the first to have it. I mean, think about it, right? Let's take that iPhone for example. It's been a while since I kept up with all the new advancements in technology, so my knowledge will be very outdated. You'll forgive me for that. Let's say iPhone, I'm just going to pull a number out of the air. iPhone 12. Okay, let's say iPhone 12 is coming out in December. So we're in May. Just tail end of May. And then you have 6 months to go. Right? So if it's coming out in December and you have people camping outside the store, I don't know for how long they do that. Perhaps, you know, they buy the new iPhone and then they just continue camping, waiting for the next iPhone. Who knows, eh, these days? It just depends on how vexed you are. Okay, but you know, just to make it a little more realistic, let's say they camp the previous night. Right, so the iPhone's going to come out tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning. So people will come along and then they'll sleep outside the store until 8 o'clock. So now they're waiting for 8 o'clock the following morning. Right, they want time to run as fast as possible. So what is the shortest distance between their vexation and relief from that vexation? Let's say it's 8 o'clock at night. The iPhone is going to launch, or it's going to release. The store is going to open and the first iPhone is going to be sold at 8 o'clock the following morning. What's the shortest distance? 12 hours. See, here's my question. For someone who's not that vexed, there are people like that, there are various levels of vexation. Some people, they want the iPhone, but they're not crazy enough to go and camp outside. They'll be like, I'll just put my order in online and, when it comes, it'll come. And I'm fine with that. In a couple of weeks, I can wait. That's fine. Some people will be like, I'm an Apple fan, but, I don't necessarily need the latest. I'm quite happy with last year's model. And, they're going to come up on websites, and sometimes I can go on eBay and buy some used iPhone, the previous model. And I'm quite comfortable with that, one might say. So one person cannot wait. One of them cannot wait a second after 8 o'clock. There's another person, they're happy to wait a whole year, a couple of years, a few months. They have no problem. A few weeks, they have no problem. What is the difference do you see here? What has determined the distance between their vexation and relief from vexation? Or others, in other words, what has determined the time that they're willing to spend? What has determined the amount of time they have allowed to come between their want and their satisfaction? Or the fulfillment of that want? Is it not their vexation? So the amount of vexation is directly proportional to the amount of time you're willing to wait to be relieved from that vexation. Would you agree with me? The amount of vexation is directly proportional to the amount of time you're willing to wait to be relieved of that vexation. So if you're intensely vexed, then perhaps putting in a pre-order and waiting it to arrive a week after the launch date might sound like a nightmare. You are more, I'll camp outside the store if that's what I have to do to get my iPhone kind of person. If you're intensely vexed. But if you're not so vexed, but you are still vexed, but not so vexed, you might be like, I'll put in the order, it'll come a week later, so what? I can wait. Doesn't bother me too much that my colleagues who sit either side of me at work are rocking the latest iPhone, but I haven't got it. That's fine, it doesn't bother me. What is the reason? It is the amount of vexation. Then there'll be another person who'll say, I can wait an entire year, that's fine. Yeah, I'll go online and I'll get 2016 model. I'm fine with that. I can wait a couple of years. I can wait 2 or 3 years. I don't mind. I can live with an old model. That's fine. It's perfectly fine, one might say. So you see, the time that you are comfortable with waiting for something to happen is directly proportional to how vexed you are for the said thing, for that thing in question. If you are intensely vexed, you want it now. If you are not so vexed, you can wait. Now, why am I saying this again? I want to show you the connection between time and vexation. Because we are on a path to becoming timeless, right? That is the end game. That is our ultimate goal. How does one become timeless? How does one become the timeless one? The undefeated one? How does one become unvanquished? Undefeated. How does one become magnificent? Unaffected by the dimensions of time. We I raised this question last week and I said, think about it. And we'll find some answers the following week, which is this week. Excuse me. So, you see, time plays such a big role in those people who vex. If you are someone who vexes, then time has a big part to play in your life. Isn't that so? Time has a huge part to play in your life if you're someone who vexes quite a bit. You're either friends with it or you hate it. You're always in this love-hate relationship with time, always fluctuating between the two of them. Sometimes you hate it, sometimes you love it. Do you see the connection between time and vexation? If ever time bothered you, like when? Like those examples we discussed last week. Those are examples in life where time is such a botheration, isn't it? You either wanted to slow down or you wanted to speed up. Such a bother. Such an annoyance. It just doesn't work the way you want it. Haven't you sat in front of a clock wondering to yourself, is there any way I could make that second hand tick faster? Is there any way I could make the hands of the clock go faster? Is there any way I could slow it down? Like when you're on the last question in your exam, or at least you thought you were on the last question and you'd flip the page over and there's another question you need to answer. And the examiner says, right, 10 minutes and we'll collect your papers. And you know that is the essay question. Been there? Haven't we all, eh? So, are you beginning to see the connection between time and vexation? In which case, what do you think you need to be timeless? Why is it that we call the Buddha the timeless one? Why do we consider arahants to be timeless? It is one of the qualities of the Dhamma, akalika. You remember this? Akaliko, ehipassiko, openaiko. what is the connection with Dhamma? Why is the Dhamma akalika? Why is the Dhamma timeless? What is it about the Dhamma that helps you to become timeless? One who is not impacted by time, one who is free from the clutches of time, or one whom time is neither friend nor foe, your relationship with time becomes equanimous, unaffected by time. Don't think this is a small issue. It is a huge issue. Look around you and you realize things that you want, the shortest distance between you and that is what? Things that you don't want. Right? Or you could think of it this way. Things that you want, the longest distance between you and that is what? Things that you don't want, the shortest distance between you and that is what? It's time again. There's always time. So people have this love-hate relationship with time. What they don't realize is, all of this is because there's something within us that makes time, that allows time to affect us. You'd become invincible to time if you were able to fix that. But that has to be fixed on the inside. But people don't realize this. Because they, of course, you know, that's what people are like, right? They don't see their fault. Always the problem is where? It's on the which side? It's on the outside. And for as long as the problem is on the outside, well, you get to see what we see today in society. Man has been evolving for millions of years now. And yet, the things that he wants are endless. There's never an end. More things he wants. And don't you see how it is not just that people want things, but they want them faster? What is one of the ways in which man says he's very advanced? Can you see the irony in that? We are very advanced because whenever we want something, it's just a click of a button. And we got it. Things can be bought and acquired instantly. Do you know they have something called same day shipping now? You order it today, you get it today. Isn't that nice? Why? Because man is very advanced. He'll pay extra for that privilege. Very advanced. Before long, you'll start to say, same day shipping, when's the last time we heard of that? Now, it's you order it and within the hour, it's at your doorstep. Now imagine someone listening to this sermon in, say, 10 years time from now. Right? And Swami Nuance is saying, guys, have you heard of something called same day shipping? 10 years from now, someone's listening to this sermon, what are they going to say? They're going to say, it took them the whole day? to deliver it? Ask your grandmother, when she wanted something, how long she had to wait for it. But you know what the thing is, right? She didn't feel it was that long. That's the beauty of it. She didn't feel it was that long. She had to wait 3 months for her new washing machine to arrive. She didn't feel that it was so long. It took so long. She was impressed that it could arrive in 3 months. Now, what if I were to tell you, right, that new pair of shoes you ordered online, it's going to get you in 2 months. You laugh, won't you? Because you know what's going to happen in 2 months? No, not your shoe size is going to change. What's going to happen in 2 months is you won't want that pair of shoes. You'll want a different one. So really, you know what? Thinking about this actually, I think this race that people have is because of a wholly, entirely different reason. I think it's because people want to order something and get it instantly because they know in the next moment, in a day's time, in a couple of days' time, they're no longer going to want it. Because something else is going to come up in the marketplace. There's going to be something newer, something fresher, something more exciting. And then, they're going to feel deflated. I think people know this deep down inside. Don't you think so? Now, a new pair of shoes. You go on the website and you see on the they've come with a new pair of sneakers, right? And you want them. You put in the order. You know, do you not? In the back of your mind, like in 2 weeks' time, there's going to be a newer model, a new design. So what good is there if your shoes were to arrive in 3 weeks? You don't like to wait 3 weeks because you don't like that feeling. What feeling? The feeling of, I could have actually ordered this one. Now I'm stuck with something that is old. This is the old model. I don't like this anymore. I want the new model. You don't like that feeling, do you? Just put yourself in those shoes. Pardon the pun. If you actually were to buy a pair of shoes, and you know it was the latest design on the website, and you bought it, right? It arrives in a couple of weeks' time. And then, you know, some people, my old self included, after you place the order, you go online again and you keep checking, is there a newer model? Because you really don't want a new model to come out. Between the time you place the order and your item arriving, you don't want a new model to come out. Because then you feel that you are undersold. you feel deflated. You feel like you missed out, and no one likes that feeling. Before you place the order, you go on the website hoping that you will find the latest and the greatest. But after you place the order, now you go on the website hoping that that remains the latest and the greatest, and that a newer model has not come out between the time you place the order and the item arriving. It's bizarre how the mind works. If you walk into a shop and you see a new dress on the mannequin, right, you go and buy it. You spent a small fortune on it, right? You buy it and you take it home. And now every day you walk past that store, you look at the mannequin on there just to make sure that there's not a new design. And if a new design's come out, now you feel how again? How do you feel again? I want that. Why did I get this? I was there too soon. I want that. Because that is what they always make you do. That is how they always make you feel. You know, these people, the manufacturers, they will space their product releases into the market and they'll time it perfectly. Whereby they'll give you enough time to buy it and get the hang of it, use it, right, wear it for a little while, and then they'll bring out the next model. They won't do it too soon. They won't do it too soon because then, if you imagine a new design came out every day, you wouldn't buy it. Because you don't like the feeling of having lost out. You wouldn't like that feeling. Imagine a new iPhone came out every month. Would you buy it? You wouldn't. Chances are you wouldn't. Because then a month later, you've made this huge investment and you're thinking to yourself, but now I feel cheap. I've got the older model. Someone else is going to get the newer model. Because they have to allow you to live a little bit in pleasure. They must allow some time for you to enjoy that relief from vexation that you have just earned yourself. Vex you too frequently and you will no longer be interested. That's the way it works. These are free lessons you would learn in marketing school. Now, because now we understand how the mind works, we can imagine what it is that they must teach students in marketing school. They won't time the product releases too often, too frequent. If it's too close, then you're going to lose interest. And the reason for that again is because you're going to feel that you lost out. You don't want that. Particularly when you're making a considerable outlay. Right? If you're spending $500 on a phone, you want that to be the latest and the greatest for at least a year, wouldn't you? You can keep your bragging rights. True or false? I mean, come on, you spend $500 on a phone. on this new piece of kit, this, you know, this new tech, this new gadget, this new shiny thing. You want to be able to brag about it for at least a year, don't you? What if your bragging rights expired in a month? At $500 a pop? No way. Really, when you look at it that way, what are you buying for $500? A year's worth of? A year's worth of bragging rights. If I go missing tomorrow, you know why. You gotta come to life school to learn these lessons. Because this is using the Dhamma to explore the ways and means in which minds work and how minds are manipulated to get what people want out of you. They wouldn't put out a new car model every month. Once a year. Yes, that sounds about right. And they don't want to do it too. They don't want to space it out too much either. Because after all, it's not just a car you're buying. You're buying bragging rights. So, you always want to be able to shine among your friends, your mates, your colleagues. And you have to, you know, they have to keep the competition fresh. Right? So, it's not like they can always, forever and ever allow you to keep your bragging rights. You know, they have to bring someone else to the forefront of the competition. So that's why they have to release a new model in the next year. And that way, your friend who was saving up and he needed an extra year to buy it, now gets to buy the newer model. And now who's got the bragging rights? Now they've got the bragging rights. You went in first and you came up with the older model. They went in later and they come up with the newer model. And now you're thinking to yourself, wondering, that's not good. How do I regain my status on the leaderboard? To regain my bragging rights, I've got to get back into the competition. So they give you a year's worth. Oh, and that is why every year they give you a bonus at the workplace. So do you not see how everything is so nicely timed, in lovely cadence, how things are so so timely, and they've all been paced out, and it's perfectly planned, aren't they? Every year there's a new iPhone, there's a new car model, right? There's a new thing, there's something new. Whatever it is, there's something new every year. And then every year, they give you your bonus. So when you get your bonus, you already have places where you're going to have to spend it. It's a perfect system. Honestly, tell me, do you not feel that you were undersold? If, for instance, you went into the showroom today, you drove out with the latest car, okay? And then, 2 weeks later, your next door neighbor gets to buy the newer model. and he comes and parks up right next to your car, how are you going to feel? So, yeah, this is where people are able to use time to manipulate you. Yeah, it's a dog-eat-dog-out world out there, right? We just need to understand how this whole thing works, how the whole thing hangs together, what are the mechanisms, how our minds are being manipulated, how you're being influenced. I wouldn't have had a problem with this if it were the case that they don't do it by vexing you. But I know it. I know that they do this by vexing you, which is what I have an issue with. Remember, there are only two ways to part with someone's money, unless you're a philanthropist. Right? There are only two ways to part with your money. One, someone's got to nick it off you. Two, someone's got to vex you. In other words, take it either voluntarily or involuntarily. The thing is, if they were to do one of the two, then they end up in prison. So, it's okay apparently, it's okay apparently to get your money by vexing you. It's just not okay to get your money by sneaking in to your pocket, by snatching your wallet. Apparently that's not okay, but it's okay to vex you. Which do you think is more dangerous? On you as a subject, which you think has a more detrimental effect? Right? Think about this. Right? If you've got your wallet on you, there's $500 in it, someone comes and snatches it. To re-earn your $500, it might take you, let's say, 6 months. Right? I'm playing safe here. It might take you 6 months to earn your $500, right? 6 months on, you've earned your $500 again. Right, that $500 back in your wallet. Not the same one, you've earned yourself another $500. Now, someone vexes you. Do you know that vexation is yours? Until you get to listen to this sermon? Until you come across the Buddha? Meaning it's yours for how long? 6 months? So apparently, it's an innocent attempt to vex you and get your money, but they imprison someone for taking your wallet. Do you think they've got it the right way around? I'm just saying. You know, so it's okay for someone to put a TV program, to broadcast a TV program and have a 10-year-old watch that TV program and think to himself, wow, when I am like daddy, I'm going to buy that car. He's only 10. He's going to have to be 40 years of age before he gets to buy that car because it's that expensive. To earn enough money to buy that car, he's going to have to wait until he's 40. So 30 years he's going to have to wait. For 30 years he's going to have to vex. Apparently that's okay. Apparently that's innocent. What do you think? You reckon that's innocent? And just buying the car is not going to get the vexation to be completely gotten rid of. It will only bring relief from vexation. Not redemption, simply relief. For redemption to happen, they have to listen to this sermon. They have to be a disciple of the Buddha. Because whatever was indoctrinated as being pleasurable, joyful and essenceful, the only way that indoctrination can be gotten rid of is by re-indoctrinating. Anicca, dukkha and anatta. Food for thought. Why do you think samprapralapa, a frivolous speech, is one of the unmeritorious deeds? Why do you think musavad, false speech, is an unmeritorious deed with the potential to bring suffering in the four great hells? I mean, so is theft. But the thing is, you know, while according to the Buddha's teaching, we see that false speech and theft can carry equal penalty. In society, you can get away with saying, come into our store and try out this latest model. It comes in 6 colors of your choice. It smells nice. It's wonderful. It would look beautiful. It would be a fine addition to your natural beauty. They say on the TV advert, and apparently that's fine. No one got imprisoned for that. It's the way the world works. It's funny. Of course, avenues must always remain for people to continue to fall into the four great hells and nourish this world. Pity. Before I lose my train of thought, let's come back. So time and vexation, you see the connection now. Vexation is directly proportional. To how soon you want something. The less you're vexed, the longer you're prepared to wait for it. The more you're vexed, the shorter you're prepared to wait for it. So what now then? What is the connection with this to, I mentioned earlier, sensuality? Sensuality is a funny thing. It's a very interesting thing to study though. Very interesting. Because it opens up the dirty, dark secrets that lay hidden. The curse of mankind, the curse of all beings, I'll explain, you'll begin to understand what I mean. Why I feel that this is a curse. Right? And when you begin to see this the way I do, folks, you will realize who the Buddha was and what he gave us. Why we are so ever grateful to him. Yeah, it's like this is a corrupt system. Completely corrupted. Much like the Matrix, for those of you who watch the movie. It's a corrupt system, is it not? Completely corrupt, and no one knows about it. Everyone's a pawn in the game. No one knows what's happening to them. But they're being abused and raped in broad daylight. But no one knows this is what's going on. Ignorance and attachment are ruling this existence, this world, everything you see around you. It's a pretty grim picture, truly. When you begin to see it the way I see it, you know, you will not want to spend a waking moment wasting it. Ignorance and attachment are feeding on you. You are its source of energy. It's feeding on you. You continue to live unbeknown to all of this. Blind to all of this. Life goes on. It is such a shame, such a pity. Excuse me. Ignorance and attachment is what will make you want things, right? That you understand. So the more ignorance-based indoctrinations that creep into your mind, the more things you will attach yourself to, and the more things you'll want. Is that fair enough? Are we all on the same page there? Now, when you want something, of course you want time to get out of the way between you and your acquiring of that thing. Because it is time that is the distance between you and whatever it is that you want. Because once that time has lapsed, once that time has passed, then you have acquired it. As I said, if it's a baby you want, then 9 months is your enemy. 9 months of time is your enemy. Because when you want a baby, when do you want it? In 9 months? Or you want one now? Yeah, when the thought springs to mind, you know, when a mother feels broody, right? When does she want a child? In 9 months? Or she wants one now? So 9 months of time is her enemy. So what can she do then about this? She's helpless, but not entirely helpless. But really she's helpless. You'll see. This is how destitute ignorance and attachment have made people. You'll see in a moment. Right? So 9 months has to pass before she can be with baby. What else can she do? One thing she could do is she could dream. Couldn't she? In her sleep, when she goes into dream mode, now she is with baby. Because what do dreams do? Dreams take away the dimension of time. In your dream, you could be 100 years from today, couldn't you? In your dreams, you could be 1,000,000 years before today, couldn't you? In your dreams, you can have your next birthday on your previous birthday, couldn't you? Every day could be your birthday in your dreams, couldn't it? In your dreams, you could be married to your fiancé today, couldn't you? When the wedding is actually planned for 2 years from today. Remember that girl in class who you have a crush on? Yeah, that one. In biology class? That's right. When is biology class again? Oh yeah, on Wednesday. So, today's Sunday. You gotta wait Monday, Tuesday, and then comes Wednesday. 3 days to go before you get to see her. Right? Oh, not quite. In the real world, you have to live by the rules of the time dimension. But what you could do is close your eyes and go to sleep. Because in the dream world, the time dimension can be removed entirely. Whose hand are you holding right now? It's only Sunday. Wednesday is 3 days from today. But whose hand are you holding right now? You're fast asleep. You're still doing your A-levels and so is she. And then your plan is to go into university and apparently so is it hers. So 3 more years in uni and then it's probably going to be 5 years at best before you're going to be able to get married, if that's what your plan is. 5 long years. But we have a solution. Close your eyes. Go to sleep. And start to dream. Now what happens? The time dimension is completely removed. And you are now on the portal. You are exchanging rings. Guess what? You are married. So, when time is your enemy, one thing you can do is sleep. In the Buddha's words, sleep is one of the ways that who plays with you? You're in someone's game, and the moment you fall asleep, then you go into your dreams. Who's that? That is Mara. Mara plays games with you, and one of the times he does that is when you're in sleep. Because in the real world, time's ticking. Right? So time's ticking. You're moving closer to your inevitable death. And also, anything you really should have done to get yourself closer to that goal, to that aim, to that ambition, to that thing you want, really you have to do in your real life, when you're awake. But when you're asleep, you can't do any of those things. But in your sleep, you can do everything. So in your sleep and in your dreams, you can do everything, but you can do nothing. Both at the same time. So name one place where you can do everything and nothing at the same time. That's the riddle of the week. So, okay, fair enough. Dreams, right? One could say, well, you know, Swaminas, yes, we understand. But, you know, it's only 6, 7, 8 hours of sleep I get every day, and maybe in that I might dream for about a couple or 2 or 3 hours. It's no big deal, right? When I'm awake, I'm fully awake, and then I don't go on dreaming. So I work towards my goals and my ambitions and all that, all the rest of it. So time is not really, you know, I'm still affected by time. Ah, but there is another thing that you can do. Cue sensuality. You can create a sensual world in which to live in. Excuse me. Not in your dreams, when you're wide awake. It was Wednesday again, right? Before you get to see your girlfriend, your crush, 3 days from today. You don't need to fall asleep. Close your eyes for a moment. Now imagine her. Imagine holding her hand. Imagine smelling her hair. Imagine kissing her cheek. See? Can I ask you a question? Give me an answer. What perfume is she wearing? The funny thing is, you have an answer. What does she smell like? Is it not so bizarre that you actually have an answer to that question? Okay, what is she wearing? I'm talking about what's going to happen on Wednesday. Actually, Wednesday might not even come to your life. You could end up dead just trying, crossing the street to get to your class. So you might, you know, the last Wednesday might have been the last Wednesday in your life, literally. But I'm asking you, what is your girlfriend going to wear on Wednesday? You'll say, I don't know. Oh, hold on, close your eyes. Now imagine it's Wednesday. What's she wearing? What top has she got? Is it floral? What color is it? Tell me when you don't have answers, okay? If you don't have an answer to any of these questions, then tell me so. Is she wearing a wristwatch? How she got her hair done? Is it long and silky? Has she got braids? What color are her lips? Still answers coming through, yeah? Well done. Her eyelashes. Has she got mascara? Has she got a nose stud? What about bangles? Is she wearing bangles? Come on, check. No, don't guess. Have a look. Hold her hand. Yeah, yeah. Okay, right hand. Yeah, that's right. Take it in your hand. Now look at those fingernails. You know what question I'm going to ask you, right? You even know the question I'm going to ask you. Has she got them painted? What color are they? Is it not bizarre? You have an answer to all these questions, folks, when you haven't even seen her yet. You're going to see her on Wednesday. Today is Sunday. But you can answer each and every one of these questions in such elaborate detail. What color are her fingernails? What's that? French tips. Interesting choice. A French manicure. Oh, interesting. What's she wearing? Jeans or is it a top and blouse and trousers or what? She got frock on? What's she clad in? Yeah? Interesting. Is she carrying a bag? What color is that? Is she wearing high heels or flat shoes? Come on, don't be shy. Look. Have a look. No, don't guess. Have a look. Yeah, there. That's right. What's she got on? High heels? Interesting choice. You do realize I'm asking about the girlfriend you're going to be seeing on Wednesday. That's in 3 days' time from today. Right? Now, what if I were to tell you that you haven't even... you only saw her once last week, right? Then that's when you had a crush on her, right? So you haven't spoken to her yet. You haven't heard her speak to you at all. Okay? Now, can I ask you a question? Yes, you know what question I'm going to ask you. Yeah? Right? Let me ask you this question. Right? Ask her to say your name and tell me what she sounds like. Oh, What does she sound like? Is it high pitch, low pitch, medium? Is there a bit of a shrill to her voice, or is it quite deep? You haven't even heard her speak yet. You haven't heard her voice yet, and yet you're telling me what she sounds like. How is that? You've never held her hand yet. Because you only saw her last week, you've never held her hand. Can I ask a question? Is her hand soft? Has she got soft skin? Now, last week when you saw her, she was in long sleeves. Okay, she wore a long sleeve top. Okay, right. Here's my question: has she got a birthmark on her shoulder, left shoulder? She was in a long sleeve top last week. Has she got a birthmark on her left shoulder? Have a look. Yeah. Interesting choice. Is she wearing earrings? Do you like them? That second question was a pointless question, wasn't it? Can I ask you another question? Remember, you only saw her once, you haven't spoken to her, okay? If you asked her out, what might she say? She's going to say what? She's going to say? Come on, what's she going to say? She's going to say? Yeah, that's right. So your plans, your grand plans are to get married to her, aren't they? One day. Good, it's good to have a life plan. Very good. And one day you're going to be married to her and you're going to have kids, right? So you're going to get, or you can only get married to her like 5 years from today and then maybe kids 2 years after that. So we are talking about a 7 year plan. Right? In 7 years time you might have your first child with her. Okay? Alright, let me ask you a question. Your first baby, is it a boy or a girl? Look. Don't guess. Have a look and tell me. She's a girl? Interesting choice. Does she say daddy or Apache? Or does she say Tati? What does she say? What does she call you? Look at her baby feet. Can you see them? Is she dark-skinned or is she fair-skinned? What's her complexion? What are cheeks like? Chubby? Interesting choice. Actually, can I ask you another question? You'll forgive me for asking this, won't you? What's her name? I dare you to tell me you don't have an answer to all any of these questions. You all have answers to these questions, and that is the bizarre thing. I ask you, what is going to be your girl's name, your little child's name, a child you haven't got yet. She's going to be yours in 7 years' time, if you live that long. And you can even tell me her name. What's her middle name? We know her surname, of course, right? I don't need to ask you that. So this is 7 years from now, Shall we walk into your house? Where's your bedroom? Now, is this your bedroom? Remember, you're still with your parents today. I'm asking you, 7 years from now, you're married, you've got a child. Show me the master bedroom. Is this the baby's cot? This one? What color are the walls? What toy does your baby like to play with most? Let's walk into the kitchen. What has your wife cooked for lunch? Don't guess, have a look. Just open the lids and have a look in the pans. Oh no, she serves to the table, does she? Right, let's go then to the dining room. Do you want to open your eyes? Or would you like to live in this world? Why do you enjoy living in this world so much? Because in this world, the distance between your vexation and relief from vexation is what? Next to nothing. Actually, it's just one chitta. This is called the sensual world. In that sensual world, you'll have sights that you like to see. You'll have sounds that you like to hear. Smells that you like to smell and inhale. Taste that you like to taste and touch just the way you like it. Sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, whatever you like, at your will, at your command. In a flash, the time it takes you to, in less than the time it takes you to wink, it's there. Welcome to the sensual world. Who's the creator? You, right? And as it's you, you don't put in there anything you don't want. Yeah? Like what? Like clocks. Yeah? You're not convinced? Okay, right, let's go back into your living room. Let's go back into the dining room, right, okay. What's the time on the clock now? Oh, you want to play it like that? Okay, time on the clock is 2 o'clock. Alright, fine. Lunch is served at 2:30, says your wife. Are you sure? So you're saying it's only in half an hour's time you're going to be able to enjoy lunch. Is that right? You sure you don't want to take your word back? So you won't be able to enjoy lunch straight away. You're going to have to wait half an hour. Is that right? Okay, right. Let's see then. The time is 2 o'clock. So you're saying you have to wait half an hour before lunch. Lunch is chicken biryani. What color? What does it smell like? How much is served on the plate? You shouldn't be able to answer any of these questions, by the way, because you're going to have to wait half an hour, because lunch is only going to be served at 2:30 and it's only 2 o'clock. Right? But that chicken, right? The chicken in the biryani, is it fried? Or is it roasted? Dark? What do they have today? Wings or legs? You shouldn't be able to answer any of these questions. It's not 2:30 yet. What's for dessert? I only just mentioned the rice being brought into the dining room, and I'm already asking you about dessert. What's for dessert? Sticky toffee pudding? Oh no, it's caramel, is it? Is it with the syrup? Don't they have curd and honey today? Over on the table there, just on the dining table, on the right hand side. What's that? That's a pot of curd, isn't it? And a bottle of honey, is it not? But wait, it's only 1 minute past two. How are you answering all these questions? I rest my case, folks. You are the creator of this world. And in this world, you don't put anything you don't want in there. One thing you really don't want is a master. You don't want to be the slave. In the real world, you are a slave to the master. That is time. In this world, there are no clocks. It's a timeless world. The longest distance between what you want and when you can have it is one citta. Welcome to the sensual world. That's why people love living in this world. That's why people don't want to get out of this world. Because in this world, the biggest obstacle to fulfilling people's fantasies, their whims and fancies, a long list of wants and needs, all of that can be satisfied in the time it takes you to conjure it up in your mind. Welcome to the sensual world. I can take you around the world. It doesn't take 80 days like it did for Phileas Fogg. I can take you from China to Brazil in 100th of a second. The moment I said those two words, you traveled from China to Brazil. Shall I take you around the world? It's fine. You don't have to have been there. That's the interesting bit. Ready for it? Okay, brace yourselves. New Delhi. Muscat. Having fun? Dubai. Damascus. Paris. Well, careful, there's the Eiffel Tower. I'm gonna bang into it. London. See, you're there. In half the time it takes me to spell out the name of the city, you're there. Washington, California, see, Tokyo, whoa, that's on the other side of the planet, yeah, so hot. You want to try solar travel, like traveling the solar system, Mars, not the bar, the planet. Where are you right now? Yes, Mars. Of course you are on Mars. Oh, you forgot your backpack. Right, let's get back home. Where are you now? You're in your bedroom. Where else? Why? Picking up your backpack. This is interstellar travel. What is the fastest thing known to man? People say it's light. There's something that travels faster than light. The wonderful Dhammapada verse comes to mind. The Buddha uttered this long time ago. Durangamang ekacharan. Travels far distances on its own. Asariran guhasya. Has no body. Lives in a cave. Yes chittang sanya messanti. Mokhanti marabandhana. One who learns to tame this mind is free from the grasp of Mara. Why do people enjoy living in the sensual world? Now you must have the answer. Because what do you not have in there? You don't have that pesky time. That wretched thing that keeps you from the things you want. And that wretched thing that keeps you with the things that you don't want. Isn't that right? Both of these things. The wretched thing that keeps you with the things you want, and the wretched thing that keeps you from the things you want, and the wretched thing that keeps you with the things you don't want. Where's that clock again in your sensual world? You know, you realize now there's no point in keeping having a clock on that wall, right? Because now who's the master? Now time is no longer the master. Aren't you now the master and time the slave? I'll prove it to you. Like, okay, clock on the wall. Time now is 2 o'clock. Have a look in the clock face. What does it read? Okay, time now is 2:45. What does it read now on the wall? See? Time is 6:35. I'm telling you. Now have a look on the wall. What's the time? Who's the master now? Obviously. So therefore, what's the point of having that clock on there? It's no longer ruling or leading or... It no longer holds the reins in your life. So what? There's no point in having one. That is why when you designed it, you didn't put one in there. Welcome to the sensual world, where you are the architect and you are the master. Where all of life's fantasies can be fulfilled. Where all dreams and goals of the future can be brought to the present. You're very poor. You've nothing to your name. Let's imagine that. Now, I want you to be the richest man alive. Let's go into the sensual world. In the real world, you're sitting on a bench at a bus halt in the middle of a town because you've got nowhere to go. Now, you're the richest man alive. Let's go into the sensual world. 3, 2, 1, you're in it. Now where is that? Yeah, this is what it feels like, flying a private jet. You see what I mean? Now you should begin to understand, folks, why people create this sensual world and why it's so difficult to bring people out of it and put sense into their brains. Because in a world where you can have absolutely anything you want, what's the need for people to come out of it? Excuse me. Did you all listen to the single sermon yesterday? Most of you would have. And someone had asked a question about when you're eating an ice cream, right? Is it what's in your hand or it's what's in your mind that you delight in, that you enjoy? Do you remember the answer to that question? And in that answer, I'd like to draw you to one specific point that we discussed. Right? When people indulge in sensuality, and again, to keep it decent, I'm going to say, just sensuality. You can imagine whatever you like. Right? Whether that is sound, smell, taste, or touch. When people indulge in sensuality, in their desires, one of the things they do is they close their eyes. Why? It could be as something as innocent as an ice cream. What is the best way to enjoy your ice cream? Eyes open or eyes closed? You know, as you're lapping it up, what have you seen people do in adverts, right? When they're enjoying particularly sensual desires, right? What do you see people doing? Eyes wide open and staring at it, or eyes closed shut? When the picture of enjoying sensuality or indulgence in sensuality, you know, those words, when I say those words out loud to you, the mental image that appears in your mind, is that a person with their eyes wide open staring at you, or is that someone with their eyes shut? We discussed this at length. Yesterday's sermon, you remember. Particularly when it's when it's something other than sight. Because the other organs, it's difficult to shut, but eyes very easy. All you have to do is close your eyelids. When you listen to your favorite music, what do you do with your eyes? Headset on. If you're sat down in one place, how do normally people listen to it? With their eyes? Eyes what? Eyes? Eyes shut. Why? These are questions you ought to ask. Why? What have eyes got to do with music? When someone's lapping up their ice cream, what are they doing with their eyes? They've got them shut. Why? When someone's smelling something, they take a deep inhale. What do they do with their eyes? And why? And although I can't give you lots of examples, when it's something that they enjoy the touch of, I'll leave it to your imagination. When they're indulging in physical, sensual touch, what happens to the eyes? Shut. Why? That's what I'm saying, you folks. These are the deep, dirty, dark secrets that lay hidden in the dungeons. But they're there to haunt us. They lay in the coffers, waiting for a Buddha to come and unravel them and to free mankind. I'll put it this way. Someone holds your hand. Now that's as far as I can go. Someone holds your hand and they have their eyes closed. As they hold your hand to their lips and give you a kiss. Right? They've got their eyes closed. Why have they got their eyes closed? Are you ready for the answer? The answer is, they don't like what they see when they have their eyes open. Because when they have their eyes open, they see your face. That is not who they want there. So what do? Close their eyes. Now, welcome to the sensual world. where anything you want is at your command. Like the genie in the bottle, all you have to do is wish for it. And like, your wish is my command, Master, in the sensual world, it just comes alive. So while you're holding her hand, in the real world, you're holding her hand in the sensual world. That's why we discuss about this. When someone says, you're beautiful, it really means nothing. What they're really saying is, you know what? You look just like someone I know. Not perfectly, but close. But you were the closest I could find. So I decided to tie the knot with you. That's what they're really saying. But they're never going to say that out loud. One, because they don't know how all this works. And two, even if they knew, you know, then, because the thing is this, right? To go into that world, they need some input. They need a stimulus. By they, I mean, you know, just general folk. Anyone who creates a sensual world in their mind. To go into that sensual world, they need a stimulus. And that stimulus can come from a sight, sound, smell, taste, or touch. The sense of touch is very powerful. It's very full. It's a full-bodied experience. And usually when you can touch something, you've already seen it, smelt it, tasted it, heard it. Right, because that is the closest you can get to something, right, when you can touch it. So to get the full spectrum of experience, by the time you've got to touch stage, you know, you're there. So now, every stimuli that you could have hoped for, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, is already there, and now it's very easy to build that sensual world in your mind. So now all you got to do is close your eyes. So, let me put it this way. The next time your best friend holds your hand, right, and gives you a kiss, and closes his eyes while doing that, it's because he rather wishes it's somebody else and not you that he's kissing. I'm talking about your best friend, of course. But that somebody else does not exist in this world. Believe you me, if they existed, they wouldn't be with you. They don't exist in this world. That somebody else is a formation in the mind. It has been compiled with various bits and pieces picked up along the way. Nose from somewhere, forehead from somewhere else, neck from somewhere, teeth from somewhere, lips from somewhere else, eyelids from somewhere else, arms from somewhere else, fingers and nails from somewhere else, and the rest of it. All of these from lots of different places. So that sort of person does not exist. But he or she does exist in which world? In a world where you are the master. That is the sensual world. Folks, you know, look at this through insight. When you get an insightful perspective into what I'm talking about here, you will begin to understand the truth about sensuality. Because I know there are people out there who suffer from this. You know, they're really battling with the sensual desires that spring in their mind, and they want freedom from it. I'm telling you, there's no point in me talking about sensuality is bad, it's evil, and it's wicked, and there's no point in me giving you all that rubbish. I say rubbish not because it's not necessarily true, but it's not everlasting. I can tell you today that sensuality is bad. You'll be like, okay, yeah, you know, it's actually quite bad. I shouldn't be doing it. And then a week later, you'll forget all that. You'll be back to your old habits. Temporary fixes don't last very long. That's why they're called temporary. Not even fear of consequences will keep you from going back to your old habits. For instance, I could tell you, do that deed you're thinking, that dirty deed you have in your mind, and your next birth is going to be in the four great hells. And I can give you every bit of detail about the four great hells from details that the Buddha has expounded. For a week, you'll be a saint. For a week. And then a week later. Remember, that did not take away vexation. That is the problem. To take off vexation, attachment has to be gotten rid of. And for attachment to be gotten rid of, ignorance has to be gotten rid of. And that can only be gotten rid of through insight, through wisdom. Because sometimes some questions come through from people asking, you know, from our devoted listeners, and I respect them for that. I have great concern for them, and we do really care about them. And that is exactly why sometimes I don't answer the question in the way it has been asked. You know, a young boy might, for instance, ask. A young man might, for instance, ask, Swami Mohan, sir, I struggle with sensuality. Right, please give me a sermon that can rid me of all that sensual desires in my mind. Essentially what they're saying is that if you do this, you're going to go to hell. That's what they're asking me to say. And they're asking me to say things like, did you not realize that your wife in this birth was your mother from the previous birth? Your wife in this birth is going to be your mother in the next birth. How dare you? You know, all of those are temporary fixes. They don't last very long. Why? Because temporarily, your vexation will be overcome by this newfound knowledge. This will outweigh your vexation, but very temporarily. But remember that vexation lingers in the back of your mind. It's burning. And like any fire, it'll keep on burning. And it'll grow. And at one point, you won't be able to hold it back any longer. And no story about the four great hells is going to keep you from getting back into your old habits. That is why it has to be an insightful approach. That is why it has to be done through wisdom, because wisdom is the only thing that takes off, that attacks, directly attacks ignorance. It's the only thing that attacks ignorance. And that is why I'm talking to you and taking an insightful perspective into this. Look at how this is a creation of the mind. And the essence that you thought was was full in it. You thought it was ripe with essence, but really it's essence-less. It is a wholly self-created world. You are the creator, so therefore you are the master. But nothing in this world is real. It's a fake. You've made a complete mockery of yourself. So I'm asking you to think through these things, folks. You know, yes, you're listening to my voice, but in the gaps, think. Is what Swaminathan is saying true, actually? Last time I lapped up that ice cream, did I not have my eyes closed? And why was that? Science and technology are, you know, they're never going to catch up with the mind, really. You know, it's only lately they're starting to talk about virtual reality. When the mind has been doing this game for a long time. A virtual reality. Excuse me. In that virtual reality world, there is no time. There are no clocks. Because time does not move at the speed that time wants. There, you're the master and time is the slave. The reason people go into that world is because of that. Because here, time is the master and you're the slave. But remember, that does not make you a timeless one. What that means is you're just a slave, even more of a slave to time. You're so much a slave of time that when time comes to bite you, what you do is you go into a sensual world. That is not escape. It's not escape, you know. How is that it's not an escape? It's like going on holiday. You have to come back home. A very temporary relief. What is the point? You have to come back out of your sensual world into the real world. Because in the real world, you're going to get hungry. Now you have to go to the kitchen and cook. And then you have to forget about the girl, your crush. In that world, when you come out of it, the whole world collapses. Now you can build a whole story in that world, you know, like your dreams. But in one flash of a second, the whole world collapses. Right? I mean, you can start off with my crush in class, and then, you know, next year we are going to graduate and or complete our A-levels, and then we are going to go into uni, and then she and I, we are both going to be in the same uni, in the same campus, right? We're going to get ourselves a room. And right, we're going to study together, we're going to eat together, we're going to do everything together, and then one day we're going to graduate from university, we're going to go and find jobs, both in the same place, same workplace. She and I, we are going to be sat next to each other, right? And then we're going to get married, and then we're going to have children together. Now you've planned 10, 15, 20 years into the future. Your child even has a second name. And then you hear ding dong. It's the postman. He's brought you the electricity bill. It says on it, red notice. Pay this before Friday, or power will be disconnected to your home. Now, what happens? That whole world you built comes crashing down. Reality has just struck you, like a flash of lightning. And now, all that time that you spent in the sensual world, how much help is that to actually pay off your electricity bill? This is the problem with sensuality. Let's imagine you spent half an hour in your sensual world, and in that half an hour you built 15 years worth of time in your sensual world. If any of you watched a film called Inception, springs to mind because they relate a similar story. So 15 years they built in half an hour. In that half an hour, you could have done something productive, but have you? At the end of half an hour, what have you got? Are you married? Do you have a child? Have you got yourself a degree? Have you even passed your A-levels? Have you even studied for your exam? You've moved nowhere closer to the real goals, to the real challenges in life. But instead, you have wasted that half an hour, which could have been utilized to earn an extra few dollars to pay off your light bill. But that time, now you can't get back. Welcome to the sensual world. Every time you dip your toes into that world, folks, you know, it must send a shiver down your spine. But the problem is, for as long as you vex, you can't stop it. How that happens, I'll explain to you next week. For as long as vexation reigns in your mind, you cannot stop a sensual world being created in your mind. Because the whole thing happens to keep you from going insane. Because what do you think might happen if you want something so badly and if you don't get it? What does that generally do to people? It makes them go what? When you want something so badly and you can't have it, or you had it and you lost it, like a mother who's just lost her child in an accident, she holds her dead child in her hands going, talk to me, child, baby, my baby, please talk to me, my baby, please talk to me. She'll say that three times at most, and the next time what happens? Vexation building up inside her mind because she wants the baby to talk. And the baby is not talking. At one point she's going to go mad. What if I were to tell you, this sensual world that you create in your mind is a precautionary measure that the mind takes to keep you from going mad? Oh. More on that next week. For this week, I want you to go back and listen to this carefully. What have we discussed so far? I talked about time. Time friend, time foe. Time healer or time killer. I talked about people's imprisonment in the dungeons of time. And to be free from that, they create a sensual world. Because in that sensual world, the time dimension no longer exists. So they are free. For the duration of time, they are in that sensual world. Time does not have a factor to play. And that time is your biggest enemy. For anyone who has vexation, time is their biggest enemy. Because time is what keeps them away, keeps them from the things that they like, and keeps them with the things that they don't like. So to live happily, what do people do? They create a world in which time does not exist. One of them is the dream world, the other is the sensual world. Both tricks of Mara. This is how Mara makes you a puppet. This is what ignorance and attachment does to you. Folks, you know, listen to this, you can't be okay with this. It would be madness for someone to be okay with this if they understood this properly. After you understood this, I don't know what else to tell you. This is what has happened to the mind. This is what has happened to all of us. And then you realize how lucky you are to be uttering those words, Bhagavato Dasa Savako Hamasmi. That is why every sermon we start with, let us take a moment to realize how extremely fortunate we are. To be disciples of the Blessed One, to be His students, to consider Him our Master. Because it was He who discovered, He who uncovered, He who revealed this bloody, dirty game that ignorance and attachment plays on you. Take a moment and think about it and make a resolve to free yourself from it. Any wise man would. Any foolish man would think, ah, the heck with it. In my sensual world, I am king. Don't fall for that trap. So as I say, go back and listen to the sermon. Listen to it carefully. Listen to it once or twice at least. Because for me to explain the next bit, what we have talked about so far, has to be well placed in your mind. Excuse me. I'll talk to you soon. Let us take a moment to transfer the merits we have all acquired. By making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening to the Dhamma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. First and foremost, let us remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And with immense gratitude, let us transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas, who, since time immemorial, have protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us also transfer the merits we have acquired to all members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including the chief prelates of all of the chapters who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and have committed themselves towards the betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget that among them are the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to Guru Swami Mohanse and all other monks resident at this monastery, as well as all the Anagarikas and Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits and express our gratitude to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these sermons, sharing them out with others, or inviting others to join them. And may, through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May, through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also transfer merits we have acquired to our devotees and friends of the monastery, who, for the sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone, from those of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as those who have passed on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. And may, through the power of these merits, they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our mothers and fathers, husbands and wives, brothers and sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends, acquaintances, employers and employees, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in any way, shape or form, and may by the power of these merits they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, and primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who are committed to protect and fulfill the Sambuddha Shasane. Let us also transfer merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. And may, through the power of these merits, they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all who have been our families, friends and acquaintances in this infinitely long journey in samsara, and who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in every way they could. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. Let us also transfer merits to the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. And may all who have lost their lives in the war, be their friend or foe, rejoice in the merits we have acquired today. Let us also transfer merits to all those who have lost their lives in natural calamities such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides and pandemics, including the most recent and prevailing one. Excuse me. Reminding ourselves that among them will be those who have been friends and family to us in this long journey in samsara. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to them. And may, through the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plain. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let us all resolve that may, through the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of Arahat and Mahanses on this blessed land. And finally, may, through the power of all the merits we have acquired today, you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become an Arahat and Mahanse or an Arahat Mahin Mahanse in this very life and in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. On that note, we will conclude today's sermon. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all forever.